Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Juan Epstein Podcast is brought to you by Loot Crate. Enjoy. All right. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And good night.
Yeah.
Cool Keith is on Juan Epstein. What's popping, Cool Keith?
I'm just here with you. You know what I'm saying?
Cypher will be here, by the way.
Cypher? Oh,
yeah. Cypher will be here.
Yeah. Juan Epstein is the best.
Now, Cool Keith, you have a new album out.
Yep. Feature Magnetic. Yeah.
And you got Slug from Atmosphere. You got Bumpy Nux. You got Ed OG. You got Mac Maul. Godfather Don. Craig G. MF Doom. Psycho Less. Necro. Rascast. Sadat X. God dang.
Yeah.
You went hard.
I went in.
How many albums is this for you, Keith?
About my 9,007th album.
It is about that, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've had a lot of albums. I was looking earlier.
Yeah.
And you've had, what interests me the most about you is you've had like 12 different incarnations in hip-hop.
I know. It's funny. I evolved with all the generations.
Yeah.
I don't think nobody could do that because, like you said, everybody was set in one standard way of making records and... You know, they got stuck with what they was doing and they couldn't, like you said, adapt.
But you really, cover all bases from where you start and how hardcore rap you started with. And we'll get to Ultra Magnetic MCs in a second. But you are originally from exactly where?
The Golden Age, the Bronx.
Where in the Bronx?
South Bronx.
Where exactly? Cypher's going to want to know this. Where exactly?
We all grew up around Webster Projects.
And let's see. Hold on. Let's see if it has your real age on here. Let me see. Years active, 84-2001. Nah, what's your birth year, Keith?
I was born in 1973.
You were not born in 1973.
1973.
You're not only 6 years older than me. I mean, you're only 43?
Yeah.
That's impossible. I'm doing the math right now. It's impossible.
Because you were already out. 1973.
That means you were 11 when you first started making records?
Well, I had a little... Remember, my voice was high-pitched.
That's
I was a little boy.
All right. So let's say you were born in the mid-60s.
I was a young kid.
Mid-60s then in the Bronx. what was so you were... Were you like in the park? Were you doing it in the park?
Well, nah, Kay, I was dancing. I was a top dancer. I used to call myself Activity. I used to dance with the Shaq Crew. And Yogi and Loose Bruce was a popular dance group that, you know, they was a hustling group on 119th. You know, that's when everybody used to go down there and buy dust. So,
The old dust spot.
Yeah, Shaq, 119th and Lennox.
Okay.
And
one of my favorite dust spots.
Yeah, we had, you did? You smoked dust?
Big dust guy. Oh, yeah, I'm a big dust guy. One of the biggest dust guys in the biz today.
Dust is different because everybody move in slow motion.
Yeah.
You see everybody looking.
Were you doing dust when you were dancing? Man.
No, I didn't. I was around people that sold it. It was like mint leaves, the smell. You know, back in the 80s, everybody used to light that up and girls used to run like, oh, shit, what's that plastic stuff?
It was scary. They were freaked out by it.
Well, they used to be like, what's that plastic stuff? They'd be like, smells like burnt plastic, like somebody burning plastic. But, you know, when people lit that up, that was like, you know, you always smell weed, but when guys lit up dust.
Smelled,
you know,
different.
Everybody clear out like.
Oh, like it was just.
Somebody's lighting dust.
Right. It's kind of different. You don't want to catch contact.
That was more like a shock. Like if you stand in a club and somebody light dust, you know, it smells like it has like a burnt plastic smell, like a funny smell.
Right. Not the same like sweet weed smell.
No, it doesn't smell like no weed. Smell like, but I knew girls that used to dip it in a big cup. So what they call a sherm sticks with a Newport. They dip it in a whole cup of. Like the whole, you can buy the whole thing. You can buy the whole, the juice.
And dip the whole cigarette in?
Yeah, but some people smoke that stuff and go to work. Not everybody used to.
I mean, how productive are they really being at work, though? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, if that's what you're doing.
Dentists, doctors, they smoke it at their lunch hour. What happened was, you know, they always had people take their clothes off and stuff like that. But it never made everybody take their clothes off. Some people just smoke it like. They just want a better high than weed, I guess. But it's not a really, it's probably a high that's more upper. It's like an upper high. Like, I mean, I took a puff of it one time, but it's like more like a, it feels like a, it's just like your eyes are more wider, but it's like, you know, if you got a friend, everybody's doing some type of activity. Like, one guy might be working out by himself. You know, you might be moving your arms a certain way. You know, like, everybody's in space. It's like a space high, I guess. Like,
so, but when you were dancing in the park, you weren't doing anything like that. You were just out there dancing. You were a kid.
I never was a dust kind of person that smoked it. But I know a lot of people that smoke it regular, that they just normally smoke it.
So what kind of dance moves were you throwing down? Were you popping and breaking?
I was popping. I was dancing, you know, we used to dance against Fable and Wiggles, and we used to dance against a couple of people. Like, you know, we had the toughest crew. We had, you know, only people that gave us problems was Lockatrons, with some dudes in Brooklyn, was real good, called Lockatrons. And we had Loose Bruce, and we had Al Boogie, and we had a lot of, you know, Supreme. We had, like, you know, we danced against Spud. We had, back then it was some good dances, but we had more like the pop style. Like, we didn't have like
you popped more than you broke.
Yeah, we didn't do all that, you know, wiggle. We didn't do wiggle, and we didn't do the you know, all that wave and stuff. It was more like, it looked more like California, like kind of like real popping and stiff, like more like a, like you just pop in different spots and stuff. It was more nice. Like, we didn't do the break dancing and spin on our head and stuff like that.
Why not? That just wasn't your style?
Well, we wasn't a break dance group. We was more like you said, we just pop. And then we had Keith and Jesse was like these two dudes that pop. They lock a little bit. But we had a nice little organization. Then I went into, you know, I tripped everybody that was dancing out in the dance world, because I was like a top dancer. So what happened was I flipped into music, and then I started, you know, I went to school with Kenny Pounder, KG from Cold Crush, but I wasn't making a record still. I wasn't making no songs. I mean, like you said, a lot of the Def Jam artists was out. T La Rock was out already.
Okay.
Everybody was out before me, like way before LL and Houdini and Run DMC, all them, they was out. Everybody was out ahead of me. So I just started writing, but I didn't never come out writing basically to show anybody nothing. You know, you always had that loud rapper, that one, mm-hmm. I got to get in the studio and spit that fire. I got to spit fire. Yeah. I never was that kind of rapper. I was a hidden rapper.
Who knew? So who knew around you?
Only me.
Oh, and did you have any musicians in your family?
Not really. I was a secret rapper writing. I was secretly writing. Only person that probably knew was KG. Kenny Pounder was with Cold Crush, but I went to school with Kenny Pounder, you know, which is he battled to get in the Cold Crush Brothers with Kaz and them. But I was a dancer, and I was far away from rap, but I was writing. I was always writing in the house secretly. I never came out and freestyled or nothing like that. And, you know, I just never went to talent shows and got booed and stuff like that. I was always waiting.
How do you realize when you're a kid and your people are all rapping around you, there's no such thing yet as wanting to, like, grow up and be a rapper, right?
Well,
it's just a thing people are doing?
Well, I did it more careful. I was like, you know, let me be careful with this before I get, you know, like you said, some people come out the box and might do something and get, like you said, their career ended right away. Like you said, they'll do a talent show, get booed, or they'll go battle somebody and it gets known on, you know, so what happened was I just kept quiet. Till I went to Clinton High School, then I met Sed, and his brothers were singers. They was all like, you know, Jodeci kind of like guys, you know, Pat and them, you know, they had a singing group. But the group was going to come out first. But Pat had some money, and Sed's aunt had money for equipment and stuff. So me and Sed went to school together at Clinton. I went to school with Sed. So what happened was I ended up over at Sed's house by accident. One night, I came over to his brother's house, which was Sed's house. Sed came home. I said, oh, this is your brother? Wow, we ended up in the same house, which was Boogie Down Productions up there. I mean, they wasn't even called Boogie Down Productions. There was a group called, you know, KRS used to be with Celebrity 3. It mm-hmm. was like him, Jerry Lee, and another guy. I forgot. It was three guys. Scott used to come up there, and we up there. It was called Mastermind Productions, was the production company.
Okay.
So we up in the Bronx in the projects. We up in Webster making beats. So the guys that made the beats was R&B guys, Keyboard Money Mike and stuff like that. So we ended up having to do a record. For me, I wanted to go solo anyway. I was writing then. I wasn't the best freestyle rap. I was writing, but I never rapped to nobody. So we made some records. The group that was singing.
And so who exactly made the record?
Well, the producer of the group for Mastermind was Keyboard Money Mike. But Seds learned the SB-12 so quick.
Okay.
And then we became the group that was originally supposed to come out was the singing group. Like a Jodeci or, you know, Mint Condition, you know, Pat.
Did you ever sing any vocals yourself?
Well, on my later records.
But, I know, yeah, of course.
But what happened was just to substitute the group, Pat said, you know what, you guys go first. We're going to put y'all out first. I'm going to take all my money I got. I'm gonna put it into Ultra. You and Seth do an album, then y'all can split up later. That which was the thing. I wanted to do a solo album. The key to doing an album was to do an album with a group that I named Ultra Magnetic first to make a record. And that was it. And Ego Trippin' was our... We made a record called To Give You Love with DNA International. Remember DNA, Hank Love? So what happened was we ended up doing Ego Trippin'. Ego Trippin' flamed the streets up.
Facts.
Got hot. Got really hot on the streets. Super hot. Burning hot record. 500 copies we just pressed up. And then Red Alert heard it. Took it to Next Plateau. Then, like you said, radio picked it up. I gave everybody the record.
I'm trying to play the damn record. It won't play off my damn computer.
I hit everybody had got the record. I hit Flex. I hit Marley Marr. I hit Chuck Chill Out. Oh, there was a flaming hot record on the streets. Every car. Every car going by. Every box.
But why? But real quick,
every
why?
Every person with a radio. Everybody out the window, everybody on the roof, everybody.
Well, why Ultra?
I walked through all the projects. Everybody used to call me MC Voltron. They just kept saying it. And back then, it was no video. I don't know how they know my face.
Why Ultra Magnetic MCs? Why?
I just named the group that. I mean, it was just a different name. You know, everybody had the, you know, the different names, the Boobies, the Crash Crew, or the
Grandmasters.
You know,
Grandwizards.
Grandwizards, Mikey D, Joey D.
Yeah,
D,
a lot of D's.
A lot of D's, a lot of E's. So I said, like, let's try something different. Let's try.
But Ultra Magnetic is one of the coolest names. Like, why?
Well, it was hard for people to say back then. It was like, until it got world known. And like you said, it became a world known a name to pronounce through the mouth. Before, people used to go Ultra McNigget, Ultra Mag Sonic. You know,
they were just butchering.
And people would make jokes and, ain't you guys down with Stetson Magnetic? I'd be like, you know, come on, man. You know Stetson Sonic and you know Ultra Magnetic. You know, just the jokes people be playing, you know. So, you know, we had
just because it was a different, just because it was something different.
Yeah, and then people would try to be funny sometimes. But, like, after a while, like you said, when the album came out, like you said, it left a stain. Then people got across to a lot of people.
So Ego Trippin's hot in the streets. People are talking about Ultra Magnetic MCs. They may not know how to pronounce Ultra Magnetic MCs.
Right, but the record is hot. Burning hot.
Burning hot. What else was hot? Do you remember what else they were playing on the radio with this record at the time?
Rakim, Check Out My Melody. Mm-hmm. No, maybe, yeah, Check Out My Melody.
That's what I think, 86, right?
Yeah.
So
he had I Got Soul.
I got Soul.
What was the other one? Yeah, I think it was Check Out My Melody.
That would be about that time.
Yeah, around that time. I mean, he had another James Brown record. Was it I Got Soul? I'm thinking, though, it could have been one of them. It's either I Got Soul.
I know you got Souls around the
same
time.
No, the other one. Yeah. That first one, right?
You think it was I Know You Got Soul?
It wasn't I Got Soul. I think it was... Because
let's be honest, that's a classic,
the
too.
The one that go, you got it. That damn. One. That one.
Yeah. This one.
Just yeah. That one, I think, was playing. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you.
Without a strong rhyme to step to. Think of how many I think that was the one. What a time this was, though. So do you guys... What about the deal, though? How'd you even get to Next Plateau?
Red Alert... you know, I saw Red Alert, and Red Alert told me that we gave Red Alert Red Alert, I gave Red Alert the record. Everybody had the record. I took the records to Marley House, hand delivered.
But how'd you even know what to do? Was someone giving you advice? Like, how'd you know how to go break?
Oh, well, me and Seth was real street soldiers. We were the Fisher Street Soldiers.
Shout out to Lee Severs.
Well, what happened was that was the time when you can shop your, remember, you can shop your demo tape. We went to every record company in New York City. Back then, you can take your demo down to Spring Records and go up to Sleeping Bag. You can go up to, you can go to all kinds of places. But I remember a lot of people was being funny style. They was like, we ain't hear it. We don't hear it. You know, everybody wanted to
be. What was on the demo?
It was like we had a record called to Give You Love, but that wasn't the best. Like
To Give You Love? You guys were trying to do a soft joint? You had a soft joint?
It was like hard, but it was like we was using the DMX or something, and it was just like, I don't know. No, we had a record before. We had a couple of jams, but like you said, we made a demo up of some records.
Did To Give You Love make the album?
Nah, it wasn't on the album. Yeah, see? It was like...
First single ever released, 1985, on Diamond International.
Right. So what happened was me and Seth, we went back and did some homework. We said, well, the drums.
But this isn't soft.
Nah, well, remember back then they had them jams that was like everybody was using the DMX.
There you are. Lips upon the breast.
Yeah.
So we're already a freak.
Right. We had Love Records back then on hard beat. So that was the DMX. Remember the DMX drums was out and the Lin? Those were the two drums. It wasn't no MPC 60. It wasn't no Dr. Boss. It wasn't even none of that. It was just, it was like you said, it was the.
Oh, this is the DMX machine?
The DMX machine.
Let me see if there's a demo here, it says, of the DMX machine.
The DMX machine was out. Everybody was using the Lin drum, right? No, but this was the end phase of the Lin drum in the.
This, the Oberheim DMX?
Yeah, Oberheim DMX and the Lin drum. So what happened was, we was on the end phase of the Lin drum coming out kind of too early with the end phase. So
okay.
I think the end phase was the beginning of the sample time.
Now, this machine's cool.
Yeah, but I'm saying it was the ending of, you know, Houdini and them was using the Lin drum and everybody was using the Lin drum. Everybody that was hot.
From 83, 84.
So we like caught that. The ending.
The end of that.
We caught the ending hurricane. So what happened is we got right in the tip, like you said, when sampling came in. Right in the beginning tip and the ending of the DMX and the Lin drum coming into sampling.
Ooh, by the way, you know how much
and Rakim and who else, everybody else was sampling with this. So we didn't have a lot of DMX records anyway. It was just one. We were trying to get in the door. Like you said, with, you know, Houdini and all them, all those groups, like you said, Flash and all them was using the DMX.
Now, real quick, a couple things I want to add here. Number one, if you're wondering, the To Give You Love for 12-inch, the B-side, by the way, was?
I forgot.
Make You Shake.
Make You Shake, yeah, Make You Shake was another big.
That record on Discogs goes for $150.
Yeah.
Not common. How many did you press up, like 1,000?
It was like 500 or something.
Oh, so no wonder. Yeah. So, but also a thing that's interesting, I think, to point out is that you guys are one of the groups who really did come out right in the middle of it transitioning. And it's funny, you're dropping gems here because I didn't know anything about the DMX machine, but it's the transition from that sound to the sample Marley Marl next
then
sound.
Love Between Love and Hate.
Yep.
Like you said, we came right at the right time and we'd have made another To Give You Love, we'd have been out of here. Like, we just caught that train of sampling right on time because I went and grabbed the Melvin Bliss and, you know, I went and got Substitution up in Parkchester one time from, I remember my boy Mysterio, Steve, I said, let me hold the Melvin Bliss. I took it to set. We went into Calliope Studios and boom, boom, bat, boom, 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 bat. Then we threw the, they used a simple
all right,
back.
Melvin Bliss, Synthetic Substitution.
Yep.
That's the record?
Yeah.
So this record,
you remember that record? Yeah, right. Whatever it was.
Woo! How poppin' was the song? Was that a big song?
Well, on the when like Theodore and them rocking it, and okay. stuff like boom, boom, bap, boom, 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 boom. You know what I'm saying? That was a big record on the Mean Gene streets of like Theodore and the DJs rocking it as far as you back in that, you know, back in that other time.
Okay.
But as far as doing the record and in record mode, we was the first.
Okay.
And making it in record mode. So we made it in record mode. We put the words on it. Then we put the chorus, Ultra. Then that record just, I don't know, it just jumped right into the... It just, you know what's funny? It would jump so fast into the mix that To Give You Love was just like overnight forgotten. Like it was never... People never thought about no To Give You Love. Like we, you know, which was like you said, we caught the ending right on time because... We made it To Give You Love probably maybe like 6-7 months earlier than Substitution. We had to recuperate real quick. We was like, hold up. We can't go out with the mechanical DMX.
Did anyone
sound.
Fuck with To Give You Love, though? Did some people fuck with it?
Well, it didn't fit in the DJ's program because that sampling was coming in hard, like the samples. So, you know, it's like you making, like you said, you know, all the DMX big hit records that was out was, you know, did what they had to do. I guess we was the last one trying to do it at the tail end of the line. It's like you getting online for Cat's Deli, but you got to get off.
Yes.
But you got to get off that line and cross over the street and go get that pizza that everybody's going to get right now. So that's what we did. We got off that line and we jumped over and just got right on the line with the pizza and just said, "Fuck it, let's roll.
Let's go to this pizza."
And we did it.
And you did it. Goddamn right
yeah,
you did
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we did it. So, and
Eagle Tripping result.
Opened doors to so much fame after that. That one song opened doors to fame. And remember when Stan Lee was on 42nd Street selling all the album covers and all the, you see Ultra Magnetic hanging up with all the records and, you know, all the records used to come out. Every Saturday morning, Sleeping Bag, Mantronics. Everybody was hanging up T. LaRock. That's when the album covers was big. Remember?
Yeah, of course.
Album covers was big to buy with the picture on it. With the we had the Gucci outfits on. With Dapper
your
Dan.
Cover was lit. Which one are you in this cover? You in the red and black?
I had the red and black with the Budweiser cap. So
of course you did.
I flipped it up and we had our outfits made by Dapper Dan. I remember Andre Harrell took us down there. You know, we signed to Uptown with Heavy D and the boys.
Hold on.
As management.
You were signed to Uptown for management?
We signed Uptown for management. We was a little bit with Russell Simmons one time. We were signed to Def Jam for management too. But, you know, Leon went and spoke for us for a minute when we wanted to get off Next Plateau and stuff. And now he spoke for us when we went in, when we were signed to Mercury. So, you know, when we got Funky Head Up signed to Mercury. But we were signed to Def Jam, but...
You were? Management.
Got Def it. Jam, Rush.
Rush Management.
Rush Management. We was with Rush Management. But, you know, we had a little run with Rush. And like you said, I don't think, like, we wasn't totally on the label. So they didn't have, like, too much interest in us, basically. They had their own groups.
Did you go
Public
on?
Enemy. And they had, you know, they had LL and
Beastie Boys
and stuff. So... You know, but that's when everybody was rushing over to Rush because it was like a trendy thing to go to Rush.
You know, you skipped over the song Bait.
Giving Bait was a treat. Like, you know, like I want, like rappers used to do treats, which I liked it back in the days, whereas rappers now don't do treats. You know, they think it's bad to record an album out of their normal schedule. Not record an album, a record to release. You know something? So back then we used to do B-sides and treats, you know, like same as the guys doing the same format of a mixtape. We would do treats and drop a record. And we ended up doing Bait for Red Alert. And Bait became like a Red Alert hit. He played it all every weekend and stuff like that, and he liked it. So, you know, people liked it, Ultra Magnetic. Records that was unreleased away from the albums. They liked it like something that we did just on the side. Like something, you know, they had the critical beatdown stuff, but they liked it like a treat. They liked it like, that's what these guys don't do today. Like,
they really don't.
They just make one record and they keep it too corporate. So we always had like a side record that we made. People love those little things when you make a...
Well, look how many, when you look here on this whole period of your guys, 86, 87... On Discogs, it says Bait, then Ego Trippin', then Brainiac.
all those records we had was little side records, which artists, you know.
White label galore. You did a lot of white label.
Yeah, which artist, you know, before we even made an album, we did a lot of singles. We always had a lot of singles. And then that's when they had the unreleased basement tapes. We had made a lot of, we was the first really doing mixtapes, really, basically. We had a lot of unreleased stuff that we used to put out in general that built up an audience that people started collecting and saying, when you guys going to do an album? Because we made a lot of treats, which a lot of groups don't do today.
What about this?
That was a big treat I gave to Chuck Chill Out.
Let's hear this. Hold on. Let's listen for a second. This is called Chilling with Chuck Chill Out. Herbie Hancock.
Herbie Hancock. You pulling out stuff over me, huh?
So you just like doing these little joints just to keep the streets hot?
We used to do those records like they was like our mixtape records, even before mixtape was even thought about. We was originally making those records, like the little treats that, you know, like you said, maybe one artist still does that, like Rick Ross still makes a record sometimes away from his album that people like. You know, that's what I think a lot of artists should do instead of taking like 5 years off to do the record, another album. You know what I'm saying?
And then
we kept going between albums with little treats.
But then you kept it moving with this.
Oh, every record I bought to said became a hit record, which, you know, the group to this day still doubts my A&R, you know, not said, but...
Well, so what do you mean? So you're saying you chose these records?
I chose all the big records that was the hits, and that's why I'm producing records now. I chose Eagle Trippin', I chose Joe Cocker, I chose Herbie Hancock, you know.
Do you remember the names of the songs or just the artists you sampled? This is the Joe Cocker.
Joe Cocker. That's Funky. There you go. I chose Eagle Trippin'. I chose that.
Shushes.
We mixed that in Chung King, you know. And my thing with that record was I found that record on a little dusty 45 and took it up to Sad. So my judgment of the hit records that I picked was the destiny to our success. And the group added on the extra songs, like the fillers, like on Critical Beatdown, all the stuff was fillers. But all the main stuff that was the main hit records that made Ultramagnetic popular was the tracks that I picked.
And did you guys go out on the road?
We went out to... We used to just go to London and come back home and maybe Philadelphia, and that was it. And then after a while, we used to look on the board at Def Jam, and we seen, like, Heavy D going to Florida, you know, Public Enemy, Paris, and they going out to... And we used to be like, wow, we never going to these places. Then after a while, we started going out to California. Then we started going out to... I remember when we first came to California, we had our Timberlands on. We looked at, like, outer space... People looked at us crazy walking in Roscoe's with Timberland boots and bucket hats, and they was like, "You guys ain't cold. You guys ain't you guys hot?" We had big coats on over in Hollywood, looking crazy. You know.
But here's my question: Why at first were you just going to like London and Philly? Why didn't you have?
We was just so hot in the tri-state area. We like a lot of groups now that they're out right now. They're only doing like tri-state shows. Like you, I really learned in the music business that you can be burning, sizzling hot in New York and nowhere else. You can be, once you get on the turnpike and you drive your car and get past Philadelphia and the antenna fades out to like Power 99, you're like, what happened to that rapper? I don't hear him no more all the way down the road. You know, you start hearing other rappers from other cities and, you know, like, you're like, you know, what happened to that hot record that's hot in New York or something, and which is true. So I learned about the wavelengths of what a rapper thinks. Like, you know, when you get hot in New York, you think you're hot everywhere.
Well, of course, it feels made. You like everyone's talking about you. They, you know, they hear your record on the radio.
Reality sets in when you get to like, you know, maybe Virginia. You go down to Texas or Houston. You like, it's kind of different. I need to get back to New York.
So, what record did any of these records pop at all in other markets?
They popped. Tri-state everywhere. So, and then what happened was I think for some reason, like, Ease Back got on rotation. Ease Back was on rotation. Every day, every morning you wake up to go to work in the morning, it got on primetime radio. Ease Back was WBLS played it going to school in the morning, in the afternoon.
This is in 88.
88. Ease Back was a one record that made it on radio. Okay, so.
Let's hear Ease Back real quick for the people. Maybe some of the people are confused. I want to help them
so
out.
So what happened was, I don't know, out of nowhere. No, that's
nope, you're right. This is Kool Keith Housing Things. Here we go. Here's Ease Back. Ease Back.
No, that's not Ease. That's
what the hell's going on here?
Go to Ease Back.
I'm trying. Keeps giving me that one.
Well, that's Housing Things. Ease Back.
I don't know why this keeps happening. I'm going to find it right now. Hold on. So, and you're saying this got played on BLS every day?
Ease Back was on primetime radio. Primetime, like Usher, every day.
Before that, you had just been getting, like, the Mix Show vibes.
Mix Show.
Marley and Red
Alert. Saturday, Sunday, Big Tri-State, Connecticut, doing shows in Connecticut, Jersey, right. New York. Like any other rapper that's hot in New York. Then when Ease Back came out, market started changing. Then I'm looking on the map. I'm seeing United Record Company had the thumbtacks.
Yep.
So I'm seeing the thumbtacks starting to spread out a little bit.
When you're at the label?
Yeah. I'm seeing the thumbtacks. Oh, you guys got Cleveland, Ohio. You guys got Chicago. You guys got, you know, starting to see spread. You're starting to see a little Cincinnati. You're starting to see a little. So it was creeping across. Creeping across, till it creeped all the way across.
And now all of a sudden you've got yourself a national record.
National record. What happened? What, semi-national.
Had you already knocked any women up by this point?
Well, we had limos and stuff. We was living, like you said, when you're hot in New York, you was like Liberace. I think we was like you said, I think the only people hot was Rakim, Ultra Magnetic, KRS,
Kane.
Big
doesn't
Daddy
start.
Kane,
Big Daddy 80, Kane, 80, 80, 87, 88.
Big Daddy Kane sneaks in.
Heavy D.
Heavy D was hot, but R&B hot.
Right, like, different
Heavy
vibe.
D was hot with the girls, with Jodeci and all of them. He was hot, but you only have very few in hip hop, like very hot, like street hot, hardcore hot. Was Rakim, like you said. And us, KRS, Shan.
Public Enemy?
Public Enemy is a strange story because it's really weird because we were hot on the streets before Public Enemy. I knew who Public Enemy was, right? So what happened when T.R. Love was not a dat stealer, but he would go around companies and take the dats. Is that a stealer?
It sounds like. I mean, I'll be honest, what you're describing is similar.
I didn't say he was a dat stealer.
Borrower. Well, you did.
Well,
say
he was a dat borrower.
Okay, borrower.
He liked to get albums before they come out.
Okay,
right?
This is
TR. Get albums. Or, you know, he would have everybody.
Who's TR? Do I know TR?
TR Love. Remember, used to be in a group.
Okay, got it.
So TR would have all albums. TR would come with any new album that was coming out, anything. He'll have Snoop Dogg's album if it was coming out.
How would T.R. Love get all this?
He would just walk around the companies and just, you know, be like, I got the dat. Remember when dats were out? Your whole album be on the dat.
Yeah, of course.
So he'd be like, I got the dat. You know, it's on the table. You know, he'd like sit in the offices and when some, you know, he don't steal.
What was T.R. Love's role in the group?
Collecting records. So he was a record fanatic and he would collect records. His mom's owned the store. She used to go to the BRE. Remember BRE and all those conventions mm-hmm. they had? Impact and Jack the Rapper.
Of course.
Those are the real conventions when people close deals. So we would go to all those things. But TR would get all the records, right? So TR had everybody's album. TR have Howie T's album. TR have Salt and Pepper's new album. You know, we ride down the highway and listen to everybody's album before it came out. Like, we'll just, you know, see what the competition is.
Sure. So I like that.
TR...
Which one's TR? Let me look at the picture. There's TR Love.
TR puts in an album, right?
Come on in, Cypher Sounds.
Hey, Cypher, what's going on?
Cypher, thanks for Styles.
So TR puts in...
The Bronx is reconnected.
So TR puts in an album.
Cypher, say hello.
You started already?
Yeah. I already started.
This is one up?
Yeah.
What'd I miss?
Yeah. A lot, but still really good, like in the middle of the good shit.
So TR puts in...
He's talking about TR Love from Ultra Mags.
Obviously.
Yeah, so TR puts in an album, right?
Okay, he pops in an album. So he's stealing the dats. He's borrowing the dats.
Yeah, he's borrowing
And he's letting you guys listen to them.
So we like... He said, yo, look, check this out. We riding down the turnpike, going to a Philly show. So me and Sad in the back of a limo, we like...
Okay, we're still with Sad.
So we hear...
Yeah, you good.
So we like... He puts the tape in, and we like, check these guys out. So I said, who is this? So we ride down, we hearing like, my Uzi weighs a ton. Like, dum, dum, tat, dum. My Uzi weighs a ton. You know, we hearing the Bum Rush the show, like before it comes out. So I'm like, he's laughing like, yo. I said, yo, who these guys? They sound like close to what we doing. We hearing the scratches, the James Brown stuff mm-hmm. and different things. So I was like, wow. And then what happened was, later on, like, I looked at the images. I said, well, Flav, they like a political version of Ultra Magnetic. So it's like Chuck is the heavy voice, and then Flav is more like the animated guy. But I'm like, with Sad, I'm the animated guy, but I'm lyrical anime. I'm lyrical, but still not. Well, Flav wasn't like lyrical. He was more like the entertainment mm-hmm. for the group. But we was looking at the demographics. I was like, wow, they got something going that's different. But the fact was, I was saying that we was out before Public Enemy, physically with the material, but they beat us worldwide with distribution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the world got kind of misconcepted that they came out first.
Right.
We were out first in New York City, originally first. They came out later, went international, and the world believed that they was first.
First, because of the way
it went. Originating with the sound, the music of the James Brown, the Terminator X, Mo Love, kind of.
Right, the whole sample
vibe. The synonyms was similar. Now, which was true, when I met Hank and them, they was like, yo, we used to listen to y'all a lot, like, in Long Island. I was like, they just said. So I was saying, it couldn't have been a group that never heard of us at all. Like, yeah, I can see if they're saying, we just walked off Planet Mars and we became Public Enemy. They told me, well, you know, when we used, you know, they used to be out in Long Island on WLIB, whatever mm-hmm. they station was. They were like, yeah, you know, we listened, you and Seth was crazy and stuff. So, which was good and inspiration, but no disrespect. I'm not mad at them or nothing, but they beat us with distribution.
But hold on,
radio is WBAU.
Yeah, right, whatever. Yeah.
Now, Keith, this question started a long time ago when I asked you in 1987 when you were moving around and Funky and these records started moving around. I said, had you already knocked anyone up yet? And you said, y'all were in limousines already. So I want to know how early you were fucking in these streets.
Well, I had freaks. I used to look at Blacktail. I was collecting Blacktails when I go to shows. I've always had my Blacktail magazines in the back seat. And then,
of course,
you know, riding down the highway. Then I had, you know, I always wanted to meet a lot of the girls that were on Blacktail.
Of course. So, did you find a way to do it?
Yeah. I was buying Blacktail loyally, you know.
Loyally.
It came out every month on the stands. Mm-hmm. It was my favorite magazine. And like you said, I bought Blacktail
favorite
loyally.
Favorite porn magazine or favorite magazine?
It was favorite period. Magazine, period.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, and then I went to L.A. and I met a lot of the porn people, girls that I liked. It and I started seeing the girls come true that was in the magazines yes. actually in front of my face.
Wow.
Like, it's very rare to see somebody on an album, you know, on the cover of something, and then
you're dixing them.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm trying to yeah. cut to the chase because we know where it goes with Cool Keith eventually. So things started going pretty well.
Yeah,
and did you start developing a reputation around women of like? This dude, he's getting it in.
Well, when I went to L.A., like, Sex Styles created, like, that whole album was the truth. Like, I took the pictures of real girls on the back of the cover. I didn't use no album. You know, I didn't use no regular girl from a studio. I just made the album cover into my whole life.
Chicks that you were actually fucking.
Yeah. I made, actually, people I'll be around.
That you knew.
My whole
exactly.
era was me. Like, it was like I was California, and... it was nothing fake about it.
Syph, don't you?
Because rappers went to strip clubs and stuff like that. I didn't go to any strip clubs. I had like a strip club phobia? Vibe in my house.
Oh, in your house.
Nice.
Yeah, like I had like girls come over and we pop drinks and, you know, I didn't have to go out to strip clubs or nothing. I had like a, people would come over. I had cameras. I took pictures, boots, everything, you know.
What do you mean boots?
You know, girls had the Rick James boots on walking around.
And, I was trying to.
You know, I didn't have to go out to, like that. Now a rapper's supposed to go out and, you know.
Were you having straight up sex parties at your
make
house?
Make it rain.
Let's cut to the chase.
I had entertainment, basically. I was a photographer.
Got it.
So I was more into photography and stuff. That was my hobby. I bought all kinds. I went through like 10 or 15 Minoltas and Nikons. Like they all broke. I took so many pictures of just nice. I was like an artiste. I was a photographer. So
you're
girls would come over and
landscapes or like plants, you know, or funny, fruit. What was your thing?
It was funny before a lot of the urban magazines came out. I did an interview. I said I want to do the girls with, you know, in the public, girls on the train station, girls. I had an interview one time, I remember, with a big magazine. And then after that, you know, a lot of magazines came out, like Show and all of them came out, and the urban magazines and stuff like that. Because it wasn't no urban models back then. It was all white models. Remember Hustler and stuff. Mm-hmm. Blacktail was the only urban
way to see black
magazine.
Chicks. Right.
But, you know, even to this day, you know, the newer magazines, girls, urban girls didn't get popular. Because you only had, Hustler and Swank and...
do you like how we skipped over Playboy and Penthouse?
Well, Playboy and Penthouse had a lot of reading. No
mainstream
pictures.
Bullshit.
A lot of reading.
A lot of reading. A lot of reading, no getting to the point and, you know, pictures. But Swank and Club and, you know, Gallery and...
Gallery, yeah. Whoa.
I don't know any.
You don't remember Gallery?
You don't remember Gallery?
What about High Society?
Club High Society. Oh, that was, but they was a little too commercial for me, High Society.
Wow.
They didn't, but I like Club. And then, you know, when you went to Europe, you had what?
I don't even want to see what was going on in Europe.
Europe had
Can I ask you a random question?
Yeah.
While you're speaking about these magazines, why was there always random rained on porn magazines in the woods?
What do you mean, Syph?
You never
when
found
people
like,
throw them away?
You ever found like random points in the woods?
Somebody's
wife probably found them, and the husband had to get rid of them real quick. Because I remember when you was little, I mean, even your pops probably had a lot of little players tucked under his underwear.
I found them in my grandfather's house, but they were Playboys.
Yeah,
my grandfather did not go
then
to.
Then you try to put them back real neat the way you found them. So
yeah, of course.
By the time
but
before
I
you get
establish,
home.
I want to establish that Julius
but the
Rosenberg.
Only thing you couldn't really,
he did not
thing,
have swank.
But the only thing you couldn't do was really jerk off in them, because if that, then you got to put somebody's magazine back.
Wait, so you would jerk off into the magazine?
No.
I just want to be very clear.
No, I think.
So, but I never found a swank or High Society or Club in the house. Always Playboy. Hold on 1 second, Cypher Sounds. What are you looking for? You want gear? You collectibles? Houseware? Anything from your favorite pop culture franchise? Loot Crate has it. Loot Crate. Here's what they do. They offer a range of geek and gamer items for less than $20 a month, okay? You want to bring your loot to the next level? Get a bigger box and even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. I like that, like Degeneration X. If you're more the type to wear your geeky heart on your sleeve, then Loot Wear, the monthly wearables and accessories subscription, is the droid you're looking for. The droid! That show running up your spine is not your imagination, okay? It is Loot Crate's October theme, horror. And Loot Crate is taking 40 years of creepy, campy, bloody icons and putting them in this month's crate, okay? Channel your best final girl with items from The Walking Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, whatever you want, they have it. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, it's over, okay? So you have until the 19th of this month at 9 p.m. Pacific, that's midnight Eastern time, to get locked in for October's crate, and then it's over. So make sure to head to lootcrate.com, okay, and enter the promo code WANEP. Go to Loot Crate right now, lootcrate.com, and use that code WANEP. So, okay, so... Let's go back because we didn't even get to like Papa Large yet. Okay. Syph.
Wait, hold on. Did y'all Scott LaRock and all that?
Nope. Yeah. Yes, we did briefly.
Okay. Yeah, we did at
the beginning.
Scott,
because the that That first BDP album,
mm-hmm. Said did a lot
Said
of production.
Said was all up in that, yo.
Yeah, Said did a lot of production for BDP. And
if you listen to the drum sounds, that early Ultra had the same drums as that Criminal Minded album.
Me and Scott would hang together more than me and KRS. It was like you said, Ultra Magnetic could have been easily Boogie Down Productions. And yeah. Boogie Down Productions could have been easily Ultra Magnetic.
Because you guys were that close.
We were together all the time. Like, we would be together all the time with D-Nice. Everybody would hang together. We was all in the same place. Sometimes I come to do my songs and KRS is up there. Sometimes he come up there, I'm up there already. You know, we used to just bump heads all the time. We'd be up there. Said sometimes they up there writing. Me and Scott, you know, and Scott was a real cool person, like a real businessman. He was the only hip hop guy I seen carrying a briefcase around in the early time.
Really?
Like, when a briefcase was like.
But he was so young.
Yeah, he would go into real meetings and conduct these meetings by himself. Like, real, you know, then other people had representation and lawyers. And Scott would actually go out and close deals by himself. And, yo, Keith, I got Boogie Down this soundtrack. I've got them in this movie. And he'd be like, yo, let's break out and get something to eat. We go to Latin Quarters. He'd be like, you ready to leave? Like, he was very cordial at leave, you know, doing his business. Like, he might come to Latin Quarters for a few minutes, stay in there, but he'll leave because he got to do business the next morning.
He was only 25 years old when he passed away. I mean,
Very good at business, very, you know, where'd wake he get up the next
was
morning.
His father like that?
I don't know. I don't know. He stayed on point with everything. Wake up, you know, he might party for a little while. He get up next morning and go right back with his briefcase.
Now,
what part of the Bronx are you from? Like,
We was all from the hearts, real South Bronx. We was all from, like you said, we was notorious of the range of Webster Avenue, Washington, and Patterson. So everybody still from
How is that?
From
a beautiful part of town?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Really nice?
It's amazing, yeah.
Really nice, yeah. Nice area. I've heard that. Saif, also, he was talking a lot about the DMX machine.
It's a nice area. Come up
yes.
there.
You know a lot about Saif. Do you have one of those?
No.
Would you want one?
I would want one, but it wasn't like something I was real into.
But we were talking about how sound-wise it was interesting how Ultra Mag comes right in the middle of the 80s between the early 80s sound and then where hip-hop was sort
Ultra
of going.
Ultra was right before that,
right.
What
DMX
I call the
sound, the DMX and the Lindrum. Like, right after, you know, like you said, Houdini and all them had the Lindrums, and they had that sound. No samples yet. You know, because, like, Freaks Come Out at Night, all those was made with, like, Lindrum and DMX and stuff. So,
Real quick, last thing about Scott LaRock. How do you think that the BDP and KRS story would have been just a completely different thing if Scott LaRock had lived? Or would it have mostly been the same?
I think it would have been totally more different. And, like you said, you've seen more other groups and other stuff. Like, I think Scott had a lot of ideas for Boogie Down Productions other than just music, like pictures, movies. I think we would have probably did a movie, like a Ultra Magnetic Boogie Down Production movie, like some real movie of how everything went about, like everybody in a movie, like the Bronx movie.
Did you ever stay tight with KRS at all? Like, were you cool with KRS?
Yeah, me and KRS always talk. Like, we was together. I mean, it was Celebrity 3 was up there. It was, you know, a lot of people didn't know KRS was with, like you said, Jerry Lee, and it was more Mad Lion came later and stuff. So, I mean, and ICU and, you know, all of them was around, everybody.
So you guys have this first album. How well did Critical Beatdown do for you guys? Did it change your life? Like,
Critical Beatdown, you know, changed our lives, or check-wise, writers, and like you said.
Wait, Critical Beatdown is, I got
the ultimate
stories.
Album.
You were on
Next Plateau.
Next Plateau with my brother, Eddie O'Loughlin, yo.
Eddie O'Loughlin was, well, Eddie O'Loughlin loved Critical Beatdown because he didn't have to spend that much money on it. He said, "Well, you guys are selling records on the streets without promotion. Like, it's crazy. Like, people are just eating it up." So he was like, "But you know, I gotta spend money on Salt and Pepper because I gotta promote them." Like, he said, he had all his money. I remember one time he literally told me and said in a meeting that he put a lot of his promotion money into Salt and Pepper, which they was more commercial, you know. I guess he had the go to radio and sponsor and do a lot of stuff and go worldwide and do his campaigning with them. So
Eddie Lachlan's like a mentor to me.
Yeah. So what happened with us, he was saying that, and he felt and regretted it later. He said, you know what, I feel bad. Like, I should have put more into you guys. I should have put more in. If I seen him to this day, I saw him one day in front of Madison Square Garden. He said, I didn't really realize what I had when I had the group. He's like, I should have just, you know, went all the way, like, you know, like full steam promotion, I guess. Like, you know, some people don't, they find something and they don't know what they have.
Right, obviously. He told me that, you know, the famous line, smack my bitch up.
Mm-hmm.
That was sampled by Prodigy.
Prodigy, yeah. Right. That's Cool Keith.
Yeah. So... And he told me that he heard that line and told them, you guys can't say stuff like that. And they were like, what you mean, man? We rappers, this is what we do. And he called somebody's mother. I don't remember whose mother, if it was Keith or Sed's mother, and was like, your son's down here saying bad words on these records.
No, yes. Are you serious? Do you remember that?
Yes.
He called Sed's mom. He called Sed's mom. And said, and he used to always go, that's not right. It's not right. That's not right. You guys shouldn't be cursing on those records like that. He used to be like, that's not right. So I was like, we used to get a kick out of it, though, because he used to always play with his pencil.
That is insane.
He used to play with his pencil. And he's like, you know, you guys are very cutting edge. And I used to be like, Eddie, you know, that's what we got to do. But he was always like, that's not right. That's not right. Not right. Me and Sed laugh and giggle to this day. Like, that's not right. So we was up there basically... you know, doing what we wanted to do. He said, you and Keith got to definitely, you know, one time me and Sal was going to actually break up and we was in the office and I was like, he said, you know, you guys are good together. It's like you work together. That combination of you and Sed, and he makes the beats and, you know, I don't know why. And that's when I was announcing that I'm going to go do a solo album, which I wanted to do a solo album before I made Ultra Magnetic. It was never that I wanted to break up from Sed. I had to go through those things to do a solo album. I wanted to do a solo album from day one before I made the Ultra Magnetic album. So it turned out to be like an accident. It was a popular accident. I got famous doing an accident. I got famous taking a role, like when Pat told us, like, you know, you and Sed do one album and then you can go into a solo record.
Oh,
and
the accident was being Cool Keith in Ultra.
The accident was being Cool Keith and Ultra, which...
Well, thanks for those records, man.
Yeah, it turned out pretty good.
What turned out for me and backfired and made me the famous person I am.
You guys made some sick records.
Now, Papa Large, oh, you're going to go there.
Papa Large.
This is a few years later, though. You guys worked the first album for a couple years.
Papa Large was turned into... super international.
Yeah.
In Europe and San Francisco rotation. I went to, you know, Papa Large took the West. Papa Large was, like you said, went international, Beat Miners production, and I guess the delivery of that song. And that followed up to...
What did you say, Beat Miners?
Beat Miners, Beat Miners.
What do you put out, Beat Miners?
They did the production on this.
They did that beat?
Yeah.
It says Sed G.
It does?
On this YouTube clip, it does.
B minus as in Evil D and Mr. Wall?
Not Evil D. I think one of the other ones did it.
Really?
Yeah. So what happened was they bought the mix in. What happened was when Mercury called in a special mix, and they said, Keith, we're going to take you on the studio.
Oh, it is a remix, right?
Yeah.
The one that blew up is a remix.
Yeah, that's the
true.
Remix. So, so what happened was this one blew up, the remix, which is the Papa Large blew up. They said, we're going to take you in the studio, let you go in and redo the lyrics. So once again, we jumped in again. Drez and Long was hot. You could get with this, you could get with that.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the upright bass was in.
Mm.
You know, not no longer the James Brown samples.
Right.
The upright bass came in. Everybody with the...
Doom, doom, doom,
yeah.
Doom,
okay,
doom.
So you had, like, you know, Tribe Called Quest, Low in Theory.
A lot of that. Yep.
A lot of that. You had, but the hot record was Drez. You could get with this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what cool. happened was we was, like, at another time of almost falling off the cliff. And I did Papa Large. and the rest was history.
So that did it that just, did that just, turn out to be your biggest record?
Papa Lodge was like shot cross country like a missile.
Yeah, had to.
I was getting off the plane in San Francisco, and Chinese people was like, Papa Lodge, big record, Papa Lodge. Like every morning, you know, they Papa Lodge was big record, like big record. Like, you know all the Chinese people in San Francisco.
I like to say Asian, but Asian, whatever.
Wow. Remixed by the Beat Miners.
Yeah, so.
Never knew that.
The big version. And by the way,
it doesn't even sound like them. It's too fast for what they
I know. Were. And Syfe,
what year was that?
Do you know who did 92? And you know who did the West Coast mix?
Jinx. No, that Jinx. Who did it?
DJ Pooh.
Oh, yeah.
Pooh. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Pooh got some hot beats, man.
He really does.
He did some classics that he don't get credit.
Yeah.
Or he's like an unsung hero.
How did you get along in the rap game in general? Because
you know what really, really spent Papa Lodge off?
Hmm.
The video right now is like about at 900,000 views on YouTube. It was just the video.
Yeah, the video was sick.
The video was most wild video ever in human history. The video was like, you know, shot by Kevin, I think it was Kevin Bray. And the video was exceptional to match the record.
It really is a great video.
So the video was like me in a
straight jacket.
Psychic home in Staten Island was cold. It was like 20 degrees that morning I did that video, and I had to go into this attic that was in the basement, kind of attic, under attic. Okay. So what happened was, it wasn't even an attic high. It looked like, because it was short. It was like a short room.
Yeah, you're crouching.
You have to crawl under it. So you see the cold coming from my mouth. 20 degrees doing a video directed by Kevin Bray. Looked like a sci-fi movie. Like a monster flick.
Where did you have that thing over your head like a dog would have so you couldn't bite someone?
That was like a cage.
You have like a cage around your head.
Like a cage. It was like a cage. You know what I'm saying?
Did you find that cage in the under attic?
It was like a cage I had.
What the hell is that, Keith?
I'm trying to find it now. Let me turn it off. Hold on.
Keith is looking for his phone, and out
mad shit came out of his pocket.
I've never seen anything like this, Keith.
I put a case on it.
I mean, I'm glad you have a case on your phone, but I've never seen anything like the keys you just pulled out of your pocket.
Is it a chain wallet? Is it chain?
Well, I have more than these. The airport used to go crazy about that. They didn't like it.
You know, like the chain wallet, but he doesn't keep the chain on the outside. It was all in his pocket.
I've never seen a keychain that big in my entire life.
Yeah. I know.
It's literally one of the most stupendous cool things I've ever seen.
I like, because I don't like to lose anything.
Well, no, so you got it all attached to the chain. You'd be very safe.
You know, people used to call me a janitor.
No, I mean, I understand
why. What?
A janitor. Because you do have a lot of keys. You got the keys.
Yeah, man. You know. Oh, yeah, that's a Jay-Z record. The keys.
Now, Syfe, we have to get all into Dr. Octagon.
No, hold on. Before you
There's
a lot to get to. Tim Dog.
Me and Tim was...
Tim Dog is... Was he in Ultra?
Yes, he was
Tim
sort
Dog
of an Ultra.
Tim Dog was a part of Ultra. Tim stayed at Sed's house. Tim used to work for Metro North, and Tim used to come on with his boots and be like, man... Tim used to love Kane a lot. Like, you know, I miffed the shift, the pitch, the lift, the gift, the rich, the pitch, the wrist, the kiss, the bits, the bits, the whist. He used to love Kane a lot.
Yeah.
And then, like you said... Then he did Chorus Line. But, you know, Tim came out with his own record. When Tim was writing...
The Chorus Line was on...
Oh, no, Tim... The Chorus Line came after. But
Right.
No, that was his lead into an album.
Right.
So,
what
happened was I vouched for Tim to get on Chorus Line. And then after Tim blew up, Sed had a deal with, you know, they wanted to do an album.
Was that Rough
Columbia.
House?
Rough House wanted to do an album.
Yep.
Kurt Woodley and them... was managing Tim, and
was he in the group?
I did production. We did a record called Porno Star. And we did another record with, we talked about like in Vogue, like we all had a fantasies. I had
it was like
Janet
Dreams,
Jackson. Yeah, like
fucking
an
R&B bitch.
Dream,
way
before that.
It was Porn Star?
Yeah, no, Porn Star was, and then the other record, Porn Star was on the Funky Head Up album, and then the one on Tim's album was one. So then Tim, you know, after Tim spent off he wanted to do his own album. Tim was in the house one day. He was like, you know, he said, I got to get known. I want to make a record, but I'm going to do the song called Fuck Compton. And I was like, out of nowhere, I'm like, I said, I'm not in that. I'm like, but he was like, yo, y'all ain't nobody ride with me. I'm going to do it. I thought he was joking. I'm like, you're not going to just Compton, right? Like, that's like a whole town. And what? So.
But what's happening that he would want
to
do?
So the people at Columbia, urged him on. Like, they was more like.
Put the battery in his back.
They put the battery in his back. And I was like, he's like, yo, I'm doing this Fuck Compton shit. Like, I'm gonna diss everybody out there. Like, I was like, I said, I guess he's doing some kamikaze shit. But
I do you realize how ill it is that he starts the song by just going, oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, when he did it, I was like, wow. I was like, you know, but that's when we was like, Tim got more like a little different. He was more big after he did that album with us on them little solo tracks. He went and got the deal with Columbia. Then, like you said, they put the battery in his back. And it was one time, like, he wasn't even dealing with us. He was like, fuck it, I got Fuck Compton. I moved to Jersey.
Yeah, I guessed.
I got my album coming out with Sony. I don't even know y'all. You know, but it was like...
What was the B-side of Fuck Compton?
But
it was a Bronx dope record, nigga, too. Or something. Yeah, Bronx nigga. Yeah, no, don't say it, Rosenberg.
Nah, it's going wild in the penile.
Yeah. But
he had another song on his album called Bronx Nigga.
But then he had then Tim he had a thorough crew with him going. I think he did it more for the sport of dissing in that point, you know, keeping it on wax. But it was like,
did he not?
But he
like-
met Tupac. It was funny, like Tim would be in LA hanging out in regular places, but I guess he took it more like this is a sport. But people in LA was like looking very different, because I used to see people and they looking at me like I would go to places and see people. And I even saw DJ Quick one time and he gave me like a funny look, but I was like, hey, I ain't got nothing to do with that record. That's Tim's song. I write with Ultra Magnetic. I'm not a writer for him.
You
did
it. You brought him out.
So but to this day, like a lot of people out there took it kind of sensitive, and I was like,
well, I would too. I mean, I would listen.
But I was like, you know, I looked at it as a record, but they was more serious for a long time. Like, they, you know, that shit stuck with them for like 10, 11, 12 years. I think Dr. Dre probably wouldn't even work with me, because he thinks like just the fact of that closeness, like just him coming from the Ultra camp. Like, we had something to do with that, really. Tim made that on his own.
What year is that? That was his own idea.
What year
is Fuck Compton?
91?
Yeah, that was his own idea to make that song.
So what is that? 100 Miles and Running era? Like, something like N.W.A.?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When they said, Tim Dog can eat a big fat. They said that on.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? So that's 92. That's Chronic 92. Is 92. So it had to be like...
91, 90, 91. Yeah.
Like, right when Dre left N.W.A., because who was screaming Compton? N.W.A.
It was N.W.A. He was mad at N.W.A. and like
Compton's Most Wanted.
Now, real quick, did you continue to know Tim Dog or no?
Tim didn't know us.
Oh, he stopped knowing y'all.
Well, he was, you know, like you said, that like they put a bat, you know, Columbia had him like in Jersey and
he got gassed.
And that was it, okay.
But then as a friend I knew Tim, you know. Me and Tim didn't hang out through music. We just was like, Tim used to be in Atlanta and stuff like that. Then you seen him on NBC with the con at all the women.
Yeah, he had a crazy story as time went on.
Tim was a money getting guy, but he had he was, like you said, he was a great talker, basically. I don't think he was a scammer. He was a great talker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tim could get.
By the way, when you say I don't think he's a scammer, that means you think he was sort of a scammer.
No, I don't think he's a scammer. He's a great talker. Like, but Tim can.
But you're saying other people call it would might
Tim,
call
Tim
him
can make you go get a million out the bank and give
a hustler and a scammer is different.
Scythe, this is what you want to hear?
But the album was, you know, besides Fuck Compton, which was a record that he had an idea to do on his own, the album was good. Said the other production, like that the Penicillin on Wax was like another classic.
Oh yeah. Living on the block, sticking up niggas out after dark. He was fucking with my little brother. The other night, my brother fit the punk said that this beat.
You know what I liked to Tim about his whole demographics and writing? It was like, you got these bullies today, like that stick up little kids, and he was like a big brother, like the, right. that song Bronx Nigga. I'm coming to get this nigga who stuck up my little brother. I'm gonna kill this motherfucker.
Like a Robin Hood.
Like you need those kind of guys, and he had Robin Hood. He had. And then he had a crew that was with him. He had Slugger. You know, he had real convicts rolling with him. People that got out of jail and actually did what they had to do and was definitely names on Bronx streets. Like, you know, he had, you know, Tim Sally. He had a lot of people that was significant behind him when he made that record. Like, his whole crew. And definitely he had B.O. with him. I mean, the whole music industry, when they hear that name.
What's
Parkchester? They should be, like, you know, they would have been. I mean, if B.O. was living today, I think DJs, basically, he would go up to, he's the type of guy would go up to a station and be like, I want to hear the record, just don't come downstairs. Like, you know, I'm like, you had those people back in the day. You know, you had your Gene Griffins, and you had kind of people that was like the different kind of people that just be like, you know, I'm
Who was Gene Griffin?
Gene Griffin. You remember Gene Griffin used to be with, manage Teddy Riley.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you had, back then you had gangsters in the industry.
Of course.
Like, you know.
And there's still some. And there's some.
There's a few, but like, few. Right now, people are compromisable.
And, but also, you but can back make in day, more back money in the days,
nobody
nowadays.
Was. Lot back, more I'm saying money. Back in the days, nobody was, like you said, now, you know, it's more corporately and how you structure your carry yourself and your relationship. But back then, people didn't care if they didn't have a relationship with you. They'd be like, you know, we don't have to have a relationship. I just want to hear my song. And, if I don't hear it, we're going to have some problems.
Right. A lot of problems.
So that was a different kind of style. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm just saying, it was more like that back then. Like you said, you would be like, you hear a certain name, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that person does have examples in the street that they will get down that way.
Facts.
So, and like, he had a guy with him called B.O. B.O. was definitely one of the most. He was a great rounded person. I went to school with him, Andre Bonds. And this guy is the type of guy will walk in, like, you can take him somewhere and he will see like a gang of guys, like a gang of dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll just walk in the middle of them and stare at them. Stare at them, like for no reason.
No, yeah.
Like, but people notoriously knew about him, basically. You know, after a while, like you said, things happen, you know, then rest in peace, but it was like things happened. So, but
I wasn't shocked that the story ended that way. I don't
But when he was living, I'm just telling you, it was just that presence that person have. Like, you'd be like, wow, like you just see him, like the boldness, you know, he didn't care about nothing at all, just walk straight into the most. Like, if he found out like somebody was notoriously a gangster, he'd just go up basically and be like, let me see who's notoriously a gangster, like, you know.
Damn. Sife, would you ever do that?
No, that was like
you said, a person like that, people definitely knew. Like, if the industry had a lot of them kind of people, it'd be like
different
said,
game.
It'd be
too much
kind of game. So, yeah,
what's the Parkchester connection?
TR Love was the record man, like you said. Of course, like you said,
he owned a record shop, right?
His mother, his aunt,
his mother,
used to run
his aunt, next to the movie theater.
Yeah, by the movie theater, that big wax. I mean, they collect all the. All the
I
hits.
Used to go shopping there all the time. Lot he used to be in there.
TR would get the mail and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So TR would get all the mail and the records and, like you said, get all everybody's albums before they come out. He was definitely the album man before.
And he's
it came
the Parkchester
out.
Man?
He was the Parkchester man connection. Mo was in Brooklyn. Me and Seb was the Bronx, the operators. Me and Seth was basically, like, Ultra Magnetic was a communicating group. We were like a enterprise, basically, like a Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock. Mo was Soto and Pseudo, and, you know, we didn't have a Lieutenant Uhura. We didn't have that. That was my favorite girlfriend. I wanted to always get with Lieutenant Uhura.
I'm sure you got, like, someone close.
Who? Lieutenant Uhura? I always
someone
wanted
in Black
Lieutenant
Tail.
Uhura. I mean, I used to watch Star Trek with my, you know, I'm like, Star Trek, that bitch. Captain, do we have, you know,
she had the Bluetooth short, before it came out.
Bluetooth on before it came out. Yeah, Lieutenant Uhura, man.
So just so the audience knows, he has his hand gripped around a fictional penis. Right?
It's a fictional penis. Yeah.
That Senator Hurwitz, that hairstyle was dope in the Chinese eyes, like a black girl. You know, you always see when you see the brown skinned girl with like chinky eyes, look Chinese almost. That was
no longer the proper nomenclature.
But you don't have that look. She was. You know what it was? She wasn't out when dark skinned girls were popular.
But they were always popular with you.
In the '80s, everybody was a red bone, and you go on 34th Street and get the number. Everybody had to be red bone.
Why on 34th Street?
Because that was the pickup over there in front of Macy's. All the players.
Scythe, standing, you remember
over
this?
There. Scythe,
no, that's before my time.
Scythe, remember going there? Remember you?
Scythe, no.
You ain't.
I'm a little too young.
When you used to remember, you used to get the chicks' numbers all on all kinds of little.
Shitty piece
pieces
of
paper. And go home and figure it out. And okay, this is Terry. And you write a little memo, Terry. I meant from the needed. Terry, I meant from the Macy's.
Tad Steaks.
Tad Steaks. Sherry.
Sherry from Tad Steaks had the fat ass.
Barber in front of the barber in front of what's that hot dog place?
Grace Papaya.
Grace Papaya. Barber in front of Grace Papaya. Big ass.
Yeah, big ass. Yeah. Now, real speaking of big ass. We got to move a little bit into the after Ultra Mag, where you've had, let's be honest, I'm sure you've made way more money as Cool Keith and Dr. Octagon, and you saw the world way more, right? I mean, haven't you had way more success since?
After I left Ultra, like you said, I traveled way more in the Octagon.
You fucked more bitches, too.
I did as a rapper.
Right.
That rap paper.
Facts.
But I'm saying I was traveling everywhere. Spain. I went to Barcelona.
That's
Spain. You know what's funny, though? All the rappers that beat me to the little places that they got to, like the little, they made it to their little destinies, like, you know, the rappers that made it out of New York to, you know, they might have went to Virginia. They might have went to, you know, Boston. They might have went to, you know, a little trip. I ended up beating all the rappers that beat me.
You went overseas.
National. I went
international.
Everywhere. I went international. Spain, France.
You do some freaky shit in Japan?
I went to Tokyo.
Japan.
The only thing about Japan, Japan stayed up all night. Like, if you go to a club in Japan at 1 o'clock in the morning, you're very early. You're very stupid early. Like, people are looking at you stupid. Like, why are you here at 1 in the morning?
How do you?
And that's in New York. People look at you like you late. You late. You late in New York.
But how did you like the girls in Japan?
Japan girls were freaky. They were walking around. It was a very unconserved city, and this is like you could turn around. You and Cypher could be together, and you make one wrong turn, you lost Cypher for the day.
That's true.
Because it's like 18 crosswalks at the same time.
That's true.
So what happened is if you don't got your phone on working out there, and he makes like a slight turn. You might as well go back to your room. I'll tell him something like, yo, meet me back at the room if you turn. Because it's like, you're not going to find him for the rest of the day.
Right.
So go back to your room, start over again. Be like, meet me back in the room.
I mean, Keith, but what are the girls,
The girls in Tokyo, it's very hard to meet her. You meet a fine girl. But she like you, and you like going, you want to go back to room? You actually start trying to
talk like a baby.
You go back to room with me, and they, hi.
And so you're like, I want you to suck my cock.
But you're like, but my boy was like, you see, pee-pee?
Did you ever try that? That ever work?
No. This is what Sid had to say. Like,
you see my pee-pee. You want to see my pee-pee?
Nah,
where did you do the best?
He said sometimes you get so frustrated.
you just got to whip it out.
It's just that you explaining to like the most beautiful, baddest Asian chick, and you like, you come to room? Like, you start being
you're
out there.
You're a translator, yo.
You start being out there yourself. You start being out there yourself, and you can't really talk, and it gets frustrated. So, but one thing you do, they do definitely are definitely real spontaneous, and they have on thigh high socks. Remember,
all
the girls they wear thigh high stripy socks. They wear all them socks originated from Japan. When girls put on all them
Harajuku
socks.
Harajuku girls, yes.
Everybody looks like the Bratz doll.
Now, Laura, hold on, are you taking the microphone?
Everybody looks like
you already disconnected.
Every
hold on, Keith, real quick. We're talking about women, so it's perfect timing. Laura, what are memories do you have of Cool Keith growing up? Because you are a Carhartt girl.
I remember him. I think, I don't know where in L.A. He was trying to talk to my friends.
Oh, yeah. I'm always trying to talk to chicks.
Yeah, yeah. Did it work?
I don't know.
How old were these girls?
We were very young.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shocking to hear this.
Cradle dropping, huh?
Now, cool.
We were like super young.
Was he Dr. Octagon at the time?
Yes.
Oh, he was out there on his Dr. Octagon
shit. I think I met him during the Black Elvis stage too.
Oh, yeah. Black Elvis.
But Black Elvis, I was really like Elvis Presley. I was Black Elvis. I had tour bus come in cities.
He had the do too, that clip on do.
You had the full clip on do.
Yeah, yeah. I wore that thing and I wore that wig.
All right, go to your podcast. Bye.
I would go.
Hi, Keith.
Okay. I was making with Black Elvis. I was like you said. I do that show every night, and man, it was good to hear every club was packed. So I go to every city, Columbia, you know, we got the clickers. They're like, oh, we packed tonight. We packed. We can't get another person in. Bonus. Go to Cincinnati.
Same thing.
Go to Ohio. Cincinnati, I go to Akron, clicker. We packed again. We packed up. Mm. Go to Memphis, packed. Like, Black Elvis tour was just packed and packed. Every night packed, you know. 3,000 seat venues, 2,000, right? Maybe like 2,000.
What was the biggest album in the Cool Keith, Dr. Octagon, Black Elvis years? What's the biggest, most successful of those projects?
I think Dr. Octagon is the most successful album.
Do you know how many you sold?
I think Dr. Octagon could be gold right now.
Is that possible?
Could be gold after a certain. Yeah,
that was the fat beats.
Because back in the day, it was 300,000.
Oh, back then it was.
Yeah. So I think Dr. Octagon might have went gold.
And, what is that?
Critical Beatdown might be gold, as far as we know. I don't know. But I know Octagon is gold.
Okay. Cypher, what were you going to say?
No, I was saying Dr. Octagon was like the Fat Beats hot.
Well, what happened with Dr. Octagon was that record crossed over into everything, the world of the hip hop world, the alternative world, the experimental world, the rock world. That record
was
grasped
by. So what
was
the crowds like?
The crowds was everybody. The rock stars. I would have rock stars like, you know, Trent Reznor and them be in the audience. I mean, you know, Tatiana Ali. I had all kinds of.
From Trent Reznor to Tatiana Ali.
I mean, talking about Octagon was like, I would look in the crowd and see somebody and be like, oh, shit. Like, I might forget a verse. I'd be like, oh, you know, I can't believe I'm seeing, you know, somebody from, you might this see like. You might see Taylor Swift in the audience, and you like,
who's that 12-year-old girl? No.
So
3-year-old girl. In the
so audience. you like, you know, at that time, you know, your glasses on, you on stage, you looking like you like, oh, that is that who I think it is? But I gotta, you know, concentrate on my verses. Yeah. But you ain't got time to go back and focus on that person because you're doing a show. So
now, Keith, by the way, we're here, and the reason we have Keith come in, reason that he has.
You got vinyl?
Because he has a new album out called Feature Magnetic. It's Cool Keith. It's out. Is it out right now?
Yeah.
It's available right now. You can get
where
vinyl.
Where they sell vinyl, like Urban Outfitters.
Exactly. You can get the vinyl. You can get it online. he's got Godfather Don, Craig G, MF Doom, Psycho Less, Necro, Rascat, Slug, Bumpy Nux. I mean, this Ed OG.
Macmore.
All that makes sense, too.
And because everything makes sense with Cool Keith. And only you can actually get a hold. You can still get a hold of MF Doom, which is amazing.
I'm the only guy, Ken.
You have his direct number? Can you call him direct?
He calls from a secret place.
He's
in a secret place. He's out in the Bahamas.
Hey, listen, Keith, Syph and I were talking about how recently we want to have more regulars. And I think I can speak for both of us without us talking and saying, we'd love to have you be a regular.
Yeah.
Will you
like
come back?
Uncle Keith?
Like Uncle Keith just comes back. Would you come back again?
Yeah.
You wouldn't mind that?
Yeah.
All right, it's been a real honor and pleasure to get to talk to you.
We're wrapping this up?
We have to.
Oh, he's got to do the move?
Well, I don't know if you know this, Syph, but as long as the world turns, there are bitches who need to be fucked.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
That, you know who I learned that from? Cool Keith.
I think you got more girls than me because you're up on Hot 97 and all those hot, wet chicks out there just calling all around the
why do you think they're all wet?
They're all conserved and waiting for a Hot 97 cock.
Goodbye, Keith. Talk to you soon.